Live from Atlanta, site of Super Bowl 53, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome, and we are coming to you from the Quicken Loan Studios. Well, actually, not quite. Not quite. It is the mother of all roadies. The mother of all road trips. I was trying to figure out how many of these I've done from Radio Row. I want to say it goes back to 1992, 1993. Put it this way. I was here the last time they had Super Bowl, and that was 20 years ago. I am live in the ATL. I am Jim Rome. We are live from Radio Row. I hope you're watching on CBS Sports Network because you can get your first look at where I'm going to hang out for the next week or so. What's cracking? Welcome to the program. All right, telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Once again, 1-800-636-8686. The thing about this week is it's a very different week in terms of the broadcast. In fact, there's no week during the calendar year that's quite like this week. If you know this show and you go back with the show, you know we approach it differently. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. In the meantime, you should dial me up, though. Toll free, 1-800-636-8686. The further we get into the week, the tougher it is to get through. So if you want to call your shot, do it right now. If you want to pick the game, do it right now. If there's something else you want to hit on, do it right now. If you don't want to call and you want to hit me up on Twitter, you know I'll do that. Follow me at Jim Rome. Right off to my right, there she is, Fudge Brownie. Hey, Fudge. Hi, Fudge. I missed her this year. Fudge Brownie is like... She's one of my all-time favorites. So Fudge was a PR executive for a number of years with the Miami Dolphins, and literally every single year, and if you know this show, you've heard me talk about it, the first person I would run into every single year, bar none, was Fudge Brownie. That's her name, Fudge Brownie. And she was always right there in the credentialing process. However, somebody picked up my credential for me, so I did not see Fudge. So I was a little bit off. But then I saw her. Speaking of which, clones... You will not believe the first celebrity sighting that I had on Radio Row. Understand this about the Row. The Row picks up momentum as you go. Monday's a little slow. Tuesday's a little better. Wednesday ramps up. Thursday's incredible. Friday's off the chain altogether. Normally, you don't see very much on Monday. So I'm broadcasting from the Row. As I walk into the Row, I'm coming down the escalator. Who did I see going up the escalator? A legend. An icon. Somebody that I've never seen on Radio Row before. And I've seen everybody on Radio Row. I've done every one of these things. All right? I never saw this guy before on the Row. And I can't say that I've ever been more excited, I don't think, to see anybody. My excitement for this is matched only by my running into Andy Reid and Javier's in Crystal Cove. You ready for this, clones? Wait for it. As Dave Whalen and I were going down the escalator, coming up the other escalator was none other than... Charlie freaking Weiss. My week's made, man. I'm good already. I'm golden on Monday morning. I was golden before I did my opening segment. So good to see him. So awesome to see him. Kind of gave me a little head nod. What's up, coach? What's cracking, coach? So far, so good. In terms of the first show, because Monday normally is pretty wide open, it's a little bit unusual in that we've got a number of guests coming in. I already know it's never going to get better than that. I don't care who comes the rest of the week. It's not going to get better than the Charlie Weiss sighting, all right? And I'm not being clever when I say that. I'm not being cute when I say that. I mean, I'm pumped up. That pumped me up. It'll never get better. Sorry that I had to max out before I even started. All right, coming up this show, next segment, I've got Cliff Averill, former NFLer. He will be by. We'll talk about his career, get his breakdown of the matchup. Cliff Averill is going to be on the set in about 15 minutes from right now. Also, because we are in the ATL... Georgia Tech is well represented today. The head basketball coach at Georgia Tech, Josh Pastner, is going to join me at 40 past the first segment. Coming up in hour number two at the very top, I've got the head football coach at Georgia Tech, Jeff Collins. Also, a CBS colleague of mine, Pete Prisco, all over the matchup. You know, he's been breaking down tape, watching film. We'll get his early thoughts on the Super Bowl. Jim Trotter. Good friend of the show, also shows up in hour number two. Coming up in hour number three, if he was our first ever guest on the CBS Sports Network, it would stand to reason he's got to be on the first show in Super Bowl, JLC, Jason LaCanfora. And closing the show for the first show of the week is none other than a Radio Row mainstay. I haven't seen him yet, but he will be here at the end of hour number one, Bill Romanowski.
Guess what?
Alvin. Do you have any sound, Alvin? Romo on the Row, eyeballing everybody who's fat, out of shape, lazy, slamming chips and sodas and candy bars. Romo ain't having any of that. You've heard Romo's act before, right, Alvy?
If they told me dog would work on my elbow, guess what? I'd be bathing in it.
He got paid too much. You know, literally turned into a bitch. Just a big, spoiled bitch crybaby.
They're sitting there eating a bunch of cookies, drinking soft drinks and Cokes and Pepsis. We're sitting here drinking protein.
It broke his helmet, his face mask, his jaw in 10 places.
Romo, what do you think that hit would cost you today, though?
$1 million.
Guess what? Ben Roethlisberger, karma is going to hit him.
And I said, don't you ever do that again because I will kill you.
I almost got kicked out of the game because I was going to kill him.
I wish I would have gone in the room, kicked out the horse.
Get good or get gone.
Romo, a compilation of Romo. That is a compilation of Romo. Hey, guess what?
Guess what?
I will not be telling him what I had for breakfast. Guess what?
Guess
what? It
was
a big freaking omelet with bacon and cheese. I won't be telling him that.
Fat.
If Romo asks, I'm going to lie right to his face. I'm going to say, Romo, come on, man. You know, it's Super Bowl week. You know exactly what I had. Egg white omelet, a few green peppers.
I love him.
Turkey. Which is a lie. It was bacon, cheese, and a big, fat, fluffy omelet. Oh, and toast. And bread, too. Fat.
Fat.
I'm hoping to lose like 5 pounds before he comes on. That's coming up in the last segment. All right, cell phone number again. Toll free, 1-800-636-8686. One thing I want to get to at the top. We are live in Radio Row. We are live in the ATL. Based on what I saw coming out of the airport last night, this week is getting off to a really early start. A really early start. The NFL set up this entire scene at Centennial Olympic Park. It's been going strong since Saturday. There's a giant Ferris wheel, a.k.a. Skyview Atlanta. It's decked out in Rams and Patriots colors. That's a Super Bowl rarity. Like I said, I've been to like pretty much all these things for the past 30 years. I haven't seen a Ferris wheel like that. There's grub. There's lots of grub. Food stands everywhere. And I will say, even though there are 35,000 of them seeing their team go off, I saw a lot of Patriot fans already. I saw them last night. Rams fans are also here already. There'll be a lot more as the week goes on, but I can't remember seeing a Super Bowl city this busy. This busy this soon. Pats fans are out. Rams fans are out. Great atmosphere. And I keep reminding myself, it's just day one. It's just the beginning of the week. But it feels like midweek already. I'm one of the first here generally, and I usually don't see that kind of energy hit me right in the face when it did. But it did. However, all those folks who were out yesterday, you know what they weren't doing? You know what those folks who were out yesterday were not doing here? They were not watching the Pro Bowl. They weren't. You know, Super Bowl week, it's full of traditions, it's full of rhythms, certain things happen during certain times throughout the week, certain things happen during certain days throughout the week. Monday is no different. Monday is no different because Monday of Super Bowl week is the day to crack back on the Pro Bowl. Complaining about the Pro Bowl, it's a tradition unlike any other. Man, that Pro Bowl yesterday also was unlike any other. That wasn't even a football game. At least before, they kind of pretended it was football. That wasn't even football. And if you're expecting me to come in here and say what I've said so many times before, that the Pro Bowl needs to be taken out back and put down humanely, if you're looking for me to come in here and say how embarrassing and bad that game was, if you're looking for all of those things, you're right. It was all those things. It's the Pro Bowl. Except what was different this year. They had running backs rushing the passer. They had DBs lining up at wide receiver. They had wide receivers lining up at DB. Melvin Ingram and Melvin Gordon got the same number of carries. And it's all happening in the pouring rain. Right? Isn't that why you put that thing in Orlando? So you have good weather. I mean, I'm not even here to show you any highlights because there weren't any highlights. And if you already saw it, I know you don't want to see it again. And if you haven't seen it, don't go looking for it. You're lucky. It means if you weren't already scarred by the interceptions that led to the laterals, that led to nowhere, you don't need to start your week by looking for it. Don't do it. Look, I get it. I get that what everybody involved was going for with that Pro Bowl. The coaches want the players to have fun. The players want to do things that they haven't done since high school. Most of all, they want to make sure that nobody gets hurt. I get that. Just understand that it's brutal to watch. Understand about the only highlight from that game was Patrick Mahomes dropping an F-bomb after not converting on fourth down. And I love that. It shows how competitive that guy is, how badly he wants to win. even in a carnival, this guy's just a football game. And he's still getting bent because he wants to win. Well, him and Jamal Adams. Him and Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams attacked that game like he was the Patriots' mascot. Adams and Mahomes were the only guys who really tried anything at all. So, of course, they were named the MVP. And my favorite moment of the Pro Bowl, the most Pro Bowl moment of the Pro Bowl, none other than my man Jason Witten trying to hand over the Pro Bowl MVP trophy and it breaking. He went to hand it to Adams and Mahomes and it just ripped the top right off. That was so Pro Bowl it hurts. That was peak Pro Bowl. That made that game worth playing. Like I've said it for years, that they should end the Pro Bowl, just no, they won't. And I understand that. Enough people keep watching it that it makes sense to keep doing it. But it doesn't mean it's good. You know, the Pro Bowl is that annual test of that theory that football's like pizza. And there's no such thing as bad football or bad pizza. Trust me, there's crappy pizza. And there's crappy football. And we saw it yesterday. But then again, that's not even a football thing. Find me one all-star game that's good. Find me one all-star game that's competitive. You know, they've tried to fix this thing. They've tried to make every single twist and every single tweak that they can. They've tried everything, and it doesn't work. And you know why that is? Fundamentally, all-star games do not work. When was the last time you thought to yourself, damn, that NBA all-star game was awesome? Did you see the way those guys locked each other up defensively? When was the last time you said that about the NBA all-star game? Never. And you never will. The closest thing to a good all-star game is the Major League Baseball all-star game, because that's the closest thing to a regular game. But you're not going to get that. The last thing you want to do is try to make the Pro Bowl a real game and have somebody get a real injury, like Juju Smith-Schuster. That almost happened yesterday. So you can't make it into a real game. It's never going to be a real game. And it is what it is. And what it is one of the worst things ever. Just know this, it will not die. You cannot kill it. You cannot kill it. So 1 year from today, you can expect a very similar take from me about the Pro Bowl like you've gotten for the last 10 years. Because the more things change, the more they stay exactly the same. When we come back, we are live in the ATL. Cliff Averill is going to be my first guest of the week. We'll look for that. In the meantime, the worst thing about doing your taxes is doing your taxes. The best part? Planning what to do with your refund, whether it's a big fat check or a pocket full of change. Make your tax refund go farther at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Do you need new wipers? A new battery? Maybe your tires are showing some wear and tear. How about your brakes? Do you need new filters? Are your fluids full? Think about all the things you've been waiting to fix. If you've been delaying some much-needed car maintenance, delay no longer. Spend a little of your tax refund on your vehicle right now and save on expensive repairs down the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts has exactly what you need at guaranteed low prices. From accessories, belts, fluids, hoses, two batteries, tires, lighting, and more. You'll even find parts for your own lawn and garden equipment. Spring is right around the corner. Get more out of your tax refund by checking O'ReillyAuto.com online for special deals, too. Save money on the projects you've been putting off at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Check it out.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Radio Row on the ATL. Like I said, I've already had a great week. Number one, one of my all-time favorite Radio Row sightings, Charlie Weiss. Number two, not only do I have one of my favorite guests, I found out he's a watch guy, so we're all caught up. We're joined right now by a Super Bowl champion, a Pro Bowler, a 10-year NFL vet. He is a broadcaster. He's the founder of the Cliff Averill Family Foundation. We are going to get into all that. He is our first guest of the week. Cliff, my man, it's so good to see you. How are you?
I'm well. Just getting the day started, getting this whole Radio Row thing going. On the opposite side of what I'm used to being on.
All right, that's a great place to start. You are on the opposite side of what you're used to. What's it like being a part of the Row as a member of the media as opposed to being a member of, well, the NFL as a player?
It's a little different. It's a little different, but also, you know, I'm going to see a lot of guys that I know already, so the interviews will be a little easy, a little fun. You know, I'm here to enjoy it, get the experience, and hopefully build off of it.
Cliff Averill joining me on the Row. So as a player, what is this week like? As an example, you're coming off the championship game, and then you've got 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. What's the final week like? What are the players going through right now?
Oh, it's a headache. It's a headache. It's completely different from any other week of the NFL. You already got the game plan set, you know, so coming to the site, it's all media. It's, you know, family, dealing with family members. You know, you probably have 10 to 15 people there that you got to kind of cater to. Your days are just a lot longer. You know, it's just a headache. And by Wednesday, most guys are like, just, hey, let's get to the game already.
So, I mean, there's so much bad about the experience that the Patriots have. I mean, nine times. They've
unreal.
Been through the drill. Is there an advantage for having gone through the whole thing, both on and off the field? Or does that experience not really matter?
I think it is for those that have actually experienced it. You know, the Patriots have a lot of turnover on their roster every year. But Tom Brady, Belichick, Gronk, those guys are consistent with it. So they know what to prepare themselves for. They kind of understand the process, and they can kind of hopefully bring the younger players along.
Cliff Averill joining us. All right, so one of the things you and I have talked about, when you look back at the Legion of Boom, part of what made it special, of course, was talent. I mean, these were some really gifted athletes. But you also make the point that guys were playing for each other. You hear that, but what does that mean exactly, and how does that show up on the field?
What that means for us was we actually liked each other. It was a brotherhood. It wasn't just coworkers. You know, most teams, you know, you're in the facility together, and that's what it is. Once you go home, everybody goes about their business. But it was different. You know, guys would go on vacations together. Guys, heck, to this day, we all still hang out and you know, try to find that annual trip that we try to take together because we genuinely liked each other. We genuinely wanted to play for each other. But not only that, though. Like, I know Sherm's wife. I know Mike Bennett's wife. I know their kids. So that's what we mean when we're playing for each other. It's just it's deeper than just playing for that guy next to you. It's for their family as well.
So in other words, I mean, that's pretty profound in and of itself. In other words, not every NFL locker room is like that.
No. And it's hard to be like that, honestly. You know, and
you can't force that, right?
You can't force it. And then, again, with the turnover in the NFL, it's hard to build those relationships with each other. You know, you could have one guy. You're lucky if you have the same guy next to you for 3 years. In Seattle, we were fortunate enough to have guys, you know, be together for 5-6 years, you know, just how the contract situations played out. And that's not a common thing in the NFL.
I mean, is there any part of you that, because you know that, you know it's a business, and you know that guy that you're lining up with and going to battle and going to work with every single day might not be there next year? Is that in the back of your mind? And does that kind of affect chemistry? When you know deep down, hey, this guy might not be here, maybe I don't want to get that close.
It does. And that's one of the first things someone told me my rookie year, actually, was like, I don't make friends with anybody until the season's actually in because I don't know if any of these guys are going to be here. And that tells me that even during the season, you're kind of, I don't want to get too close to this guy because I don't know when I'm going to be gone, when he's going to be gone. But again, in Seattle, we were fortunate enough to know that, hey, these guys are going to be here because they're still on their rookie deals and they're playing outstanding ball. So it just happened organically.
Cliff Averill joins me on Radio Row. The other thing that's amazing to me about that group, you had some immense personalities, man. There were some really strong-willed guys. You could see where guys might knock heads, where they might not like each other. How do you explain that part of it? How does a group with so many really big personalities connect the way it did and have the chemistry you guys had?
I think the personalities are actually what kept us together, actually. You know, the perception of some of the guys, you know, being outspoken and loud and all these different things, but the other side of it is guys genuinely liked each other again. You know, Mike B would go out of his way to make sure everybody had lunch on Thursdays, or, you know, Sherm goes out of his way to come to all the foundation events or whatever, just different things like that throughout the locker room, I think is what made us all just connect on a different level.
Listen, Cliff, I don't want to bring up the sore subject. And, of course, whenever somebody says they don't want to bring up the sore subject, they want to bring up the sore subject.
Exactly.
You know, there was that Super Bowl against the Patriots. Yeah. They included the Russell Wilson pick. You know where I'm going with that.
I mean,
losing that game has got to be excruciating enough.
Yeah.
Losing it like that has got to make it even worse if you feel like it cost you that game. In hindsight, did players stop trusting the coaching staff at all and maybe even each other? Like, what kind of an impact would something like that have on a locker room that we're talking about that was so good?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was with that whole situation, and obviously I've talked about this a few times.
You have.
Is that, yes, guys kind of question, start questioning basically the philosophy a little bit, but I don't think guys stop playing for each other, though. You know, I think guys still continue to want to play for each other, and again, it shows till this day because we still all have great relationships with each other. But at that particular moment, yeah, everybody was ticked. Everybody was mad because they felt like, you know, they got robbed of a Super Bowl ring. Now, that being said, too, we all talk about this as well, is, hey, a lot of people talk about the one we didn't get, but we did get one. Now, let's not forget that piece, too, because we know multiple guys that play 10, 11, 12 years that never get to the Super Bowl, let alone win one.
So do you find yourself thinking about the one you won or the one that got away? What do you think about more often?
Well, I'm a Super Bowl champ, so I think about the one
good.
I won. I'm one of those guys, hey, everything's half full.
You should. You absolutely should.
Exactly.
You know, something else you and I have talked about, week 4 of 2017, you had a really scary neck injury. initially you couldn't feel your arms, and then the feeling comes back. You thought it was just a stinger. Can you take me through the play? And as a guy who plays the game, like, how did you process that, and what were you thinking at the time?
I was scary. You know, initially, I didn't think the injury was as serious as it was. So going after making a play that I've done numerous times, trying to swipe the quarterback's leg, just a perfect storm hits me in the chin or whatnot. Both arms kind of go numb. I'm thinking it's a stinger. You know, shake it off. Next play, you go back in, you know. And then, fortunately for Dr. Herring, shouts out to Dr. Herring and the Seahawks, he's like, no, this is a little more, it's deeper than that, you know. So let's go to the hospital. Go to the hospital, and the doctor asked me within a 30-minute span, hey, are you sure you're okay? Are you sure you're okay? And I'm looking at him like, bro, I'm good. Like, I want to catch the fourth quarter.
Are you not telling me something?
Yeah, I'm like, I want to go play the fourth quarter. Like, I feel fine. And, I mean, he just kept asking, and then probably after, like, the 10th time, he's, hey, the reason I keep asking is because most people don't walk in with this injury. They're paralyzed.
Wow.
And that's when it hit me, like, whoa. You know, this thing is serious. And that's when I started, like, you know, wondering, hey, will I ever play again? And through this whole process, and again, this is what I talk about with us being so close. Through this whole process, halftime rolls around, Mike Bennett's FaceTiming me. You know, Sherm's texting me. These guys are checking in on me. They're like, hey, where you at? Like, we expected to see you in the locker room. You know, what's going on type of thing. And, you know, but it was definitely a scary situation once I heard that.
Cliff Averill joining us. That's a terrifying situation. What about this year? I mean, obviously, you're natural at this. You're getting to broadcasting. I knew you were going to do that. You're doing real well already.
Thank you.
What was that first year like without football?
Yeah, it's different. It's different. And it's not necessarily even playing the game. It's the camaraderie. This is the piece people don't think about is, so I've been playing football for 16 years. I'm only 32, so half my life, right? Half my life I've been in a locker room with at least 50 to 100 guys. College is 100. So between 50 to 100 guys every single year for 16 years of your life, and then all that's taken away. Now it's just you, your wife, and your kids, you know? And that's the different part. That's the psychological piece that most people don't think about that kind of bothered me a little bit. But fortunately, I have a great relationship with the Seahawks, and I can go into the facility, and I can still go talk to Bobby, and I can be in the locker room. I can still get that fix of being around the fellas. But a lot of guys don't have that.
Listen, you have an amazing life. I mean, you really have an amazing life. That said, it's not the same, though, is it?
No, it's completely different.
It's not the same when you're not there doing the work and bleeding and sweating with these guys. It's nobody's fault. It is what it is. You had a great career, but it's not the same.
No, it's not the same at all. It doesn't come close to being the same, you know. But I will say, I look at things a little different, is this could have happened year one of my career, you know. But this happened year 10 where I was fortunate enough to win a Super Bowl, go to the Pro Bowl, do all these different things. You know, it could have been worse. Like the doctor said, I could have been paralyzed. You know,
I'm laughing because all of us do is think about what we don't have instead of the great things that we do have.
Exactly. Right. So I can't complain. It was a great, great ride.
And then off the field, Cliff, you and your foundation have done some amazing work in Haiti, which is where your parents emigrated from. Mm-hmm. It's something you and I have talked about also in the past. But before we get into it, for people who do not know, what is life like in Haiti? How would you describe life there?
Oh, wow. So it's two sides to it. Life in Haiti for a lot of people is, you know, poverty, don't have food, electricity, the simple things that we kind of sometimes take for granted. You got this huge building, right, with lights everywhere and water everywhere. That's not the case in Haiti. But there's another side to it, too, where this island is just such a beautiful place. Like, I'm looking for some land there now to build a beach house out there, actually, because it's that pretty. Like, the water is amazing. Most people don't even realize Haiti and the Dominican Republic is one island. It's just split down the middle, right? So, you know, just given that perspective of how beautiful it is. But, yes, poverty and corruption and all these different things are happening there as well.
And then you've built houses already. You built a school, too. What's it like when you go back and you see the impact of the work that you and your foundation have done?
It's unreal. I'm building a school right now. School actually will be done this fall. I'm heading back to Haiti in April. I'm bringing some of my teammates, Marshawn, Mike B. Quite a few guys are going to go with me as well. And, you know, just seeing the happiness that these kids have, you know, just how appreciative they are to have a building where they can actually come and learn. I mean, like, kids are walking 2-3 miles just to get to school because they're happy that they have this opportunity, right? So just seeing their faces and seeing how happy they are, it just keeps you into it and makes you want to do more.
Good for you. And finally, when you bring your teammates who have not been there before, what is their reaction?
Oh, they all are like, man, you're changing lives. You're changing, you know, this is not something that you'll see the actual impact of, but, like, it's going way deeper than, you know, we expect. And the guys, you know, they get there and they get emotional and they want to get find ways of being a part of it. Marshawn actually donated to build a classroom at my school. Coach Carroll actually donated to build a classroom at my school. And that's what it's about for me, is just getting more people aware of what's going on out there and how we can make an impact.
He is a Super Bowl champion and a Pro Bowler, 10-year NFL vet, a broadcaster, good friend of the program, and the founder of the Cliff Averill Family Foundation. My man, I appreciate you starting us off. That's a great way to start Radio Row and Super Bowl week. Really good to see you, Cliff.
Oh, same here. Thank you for having me.
Great job. Always good talking to you. Cliff Averill. All right, we'll take a short time out. And if you want to react to anything you see this week, you know where to find me. Hit me up on the phones, toll-free, 1-800-636-8686, or follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can also email me, too. Josh Pastner is going to be joining me next. We'll talk some Georgia Tech basketball. But first up, here is your bottom of the hour.
Live from Atlanta, site of Super Bowl 53, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. We are live in Atlanta. My name is Jim Rome. We're live on Radio Row. Best thing about Radio Row is you can generally get caught up with people in person that you more normally might not be able to do in person during the entire season. Even better when it's somebody who's not football-related, but rather basketball-related, because we are in the ATL. We're joined right now by the head basketball coach at Georgia Tech, third season at Georgia Tech, 2017 ACC Coach of the Year. He's got a couple of regular season titles, three conference titles at Memphis, Georgia Tech 11-9 on the year. They're at home against North Carolina tomorrow night, and we've got the head coach of Georgia Tech, Josh Pastner, joining me on Radio Row. Josh, it is so good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Jim, are you going to come to the game tomorrow? I got two tickets for you if you want to come.
Hey, now we're talking. Good seats?
Good seats.
On the bench?
If you want to be on the bench, I'll put you right on the bench. I'll at least put you right behind us, if worst case to worst.
I may take you up on that.
Yeah, let me know.
I've got some eligibility left. Can you get me the rock?
We need shooters.
Okay. And before I talk to you about that, and I want to hear all about the team, but how are you doing here? How is life at Georgia Tech?
Yeah, you know what? It's totally different than Memphis. You know, when I took over at Memphis, I was following John Calipari, and who had won 95% of his games, and I only got the job at Memphis because nobody wanted to follow John Calipari. They might want to follow me, but they don't want to follow Calipari. I was the last man standing that wanted that had a chance at the job. So, you know, I was there for 7 years. We had great success, and we had won about over 70% of our games. Usually when that happens, you get a statue built of you. But when you're following 95% winning percentage, you're like, what's wrong with you, coach? And so when I saw the Georgia Tech job open, I was like, that's a great job. It's in Atlanta, in the ACC. You have an opportunity to continue to build something. And there's other – it's not where the whole stress and focus is strictly on you. Where, like, Memphis basketball is very similar to Green Bay Packers or the New York Yankees in a 30 to 50-mile radius. So I thought, man, this is a great job. When that job opened, I was like, this is awesome. And they said, when I got the job, they said, we need someone who's ultra positive, because we're going to have to, you know, have a chance to rebuild it back up, and it's going to take some time, but you're going to have to stay ultra positive through some tough times, and there could be a lot of losses. And I said, I'm the guy, I'm a positive guy, and I want the opportunity. That way I've seen it from both ends of the spectrum. And so I'm excited. There's so much good here in Atlanta. There's so much great in Georgia Tech. I mean, it's an unbelievable school. We got a tremendous athletic director, president. People talk about the academics. I'm like, it's awesome. Yeah, it's a hard school. But guess what? You really can be efficient recruiting because it's a smaller pool. Yes, you got to get those guys who are good enough to play in the ACC, which is an incredible league. This league is incredible. So you got to get guys who are good enough but can also handle the academics. And we got a lot to offer, obviously, here in Atlanta.
Josh Pastner joining us. He's the head coach of Georgia Tech. We're here to talk about Georgia Tech. One more thought about Memphis. I thought that was a really candid response and a really interesting answer. Knowing what you know now, would you do that again?
Absolutely. You know what? A few things. 7 years there, and here's how I took it. You know, for 7 years after every game, the amount of pressure to win was such a relief, because if you win, it was such a relief that I felt like I could actually go out the next day to a restaurant.
Wow. Well, was there no joy in winning, only relief?
Only strictly relief. Mm-hmm. And the thrill of victory towards the agony of defeat when we lost, because of the city, you were literally the mayor of the city in that city because how important basketball is. And there is, I mean, it is basketball.
And the mayor before you went on to be the president of the United States.
Yeah, I mean,
that's tough. Like, I mean, Josh, you are forever positive. You are relentlessly positive. You have an immense belief in yourself.
Yes.
You have to, right?
Of course.
Did people try to talk you out of it? Like, man, you do not want to do that.
Most people, yeah, people said you're going to survive for 1 year there. And I told people, look, John, what he did in those 4 years will never be duplicated in the history of the game again. 95% winning, look, I remember one of my great years. We went undefeated in regular season. We went 18-0, and then we went 3-0 in the conference tournament. 21 wins. You know what people said? Big deal. Calipari won 63 straight games.
Big deal. Cal does it every single year.
Yeah. So
you had to be like, are you kidding me?
It's an incredible place. It's the intensity, the passion. It is so intense. And here I am, 31 at the time. When I got the job, I was 31. And you know what? When you take over a multi-million-dollar business, you usually have like a month to hang with the CEO. When you move over those 6 inches, every...
How far are those 6 inches?
Talk about
moving 6 inches. What's that like?
There is no blue book that can tell you what to do. How about I get criticized in my halftime interviews? I'm too upbeat. I'm too positive. I mean, what about...
Why do you smile so much?
There you go.
What are you so happy about?
Hey, I haven't got enough technicals fouls with the...
Don't you care?
And so everything is solely... It's so criticized and looked at. But I loved it. And I used to tell people all the time, I love being the head coach at Memphis because the intensity of the job, and you have to understand it and accept it and embrace it. And I understand in the smallest of all small scopes, when some of these people who are in such scrutiny in such an intense way, I get it because I was like that in 7 years for a 50-mile radius around the city.
Josh,
I totally
Pastner.
Get it.
Joining us. I really appreciate your thoughts on that. So here, you go up against Duke the other night, and you gave them all they could handle now. You gave them all they could handle before they pulled away in the second half.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want that win, but what did your guys show you in the way they went after it, especially on defense, and held Duke to 27 in the first half?
Well, Jim, let me just, first of all, this league is just, it's incredible. Think about it. We played Duke on Saturday. Well, guess what? 72 hours later, we're playing North Carolina. 72 hours later, we're at Florida State. Then we got to come back and play Clemson. I mean, it's just, there's no nights off. But let me tell you on Duke. Obviously, we played pretty well. We're a very good defensive team. In my 2.5 years here, we've been very good defensively. We're young this year. What hurt us, which is great for us recruiting down the line, but we lost a kid, Josh Okogie, who went pro and with the 20th pick in the draft after his sophomore year. When you're rebuilding something, that's a hard thing to sustain, to lose a guy after your sophomore year when you weren't expecting it.
Right.
If you're at one of those other blue bloods and you lose him, you already know it coming in. We didn't expect that. That's 20 points a game in the ACC that we lost. You can't go get that in June.
Mm.
Not at Georgia when we're trying to build it up and you're fighting and scrapping and kicking and clawing to move up the ladder in this league. So anyway, we played well versus Duke. And I looking back at the film, you know what? Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, they're pros playing in college.
That's for sure.
So there was a couple plays where we were so good defensively, and they still scored on us. And I just told our guys, hey, those guys are pros playing in college, and there's nothing else we could do. Like Zion Williamson one time did like this, 40 feet away, did this to the point guard, to Trey Jones, and he threw, and our guy is 6'10", his hands up there, and Zion dunks the ball.
It didn't matter.
What are you going to do?
So what do you make of that? I mean, you've been around this game a long, long time. You've seen everything there is to see in this game. What do you make of what you saw from Zion?
Well, I think he is so quick. You know, of course I saw him a bunch in recruiting, but now seeing it up close, he is so quick off the floor. He is so explosive off the floor. He's literally like Charles Barkley, and he is powerful. His quickness, like the speed and quickness of his athleticism. He's not just an athlete. He is so fast. Like his quick twitch muscle fibers is incredible. And so he could play in the NFL or the NBA. Now, will there be both? Yeah, or both.
At the same time.
The question becomes, and I think R.J. Barrett's really good as well, a very good basketball player. You know, people are going to ask, well, how's Zion's skill set? Will that translate to the NBA? I think it's going to translate even more because of the rules. There's more spacing, and it's offensive-minded. And he is so strong. I think, and plus with the marketing, whoever's the number one pick is picking Zion.
Josh Pastner joining us. You mentioned the conference. Now, the ACC, it's got four teams in the top 11 right now. The fact that it's tough is not a surprise to you. You knew what you were signing up for. But as you point out, you got Duke, you got North Carolina, Clemson's not too far down the road. How do you make sure that your guys learn from every game but are always focused on the next thing and don't get caught up?
Well, you know what, Jim? Here's what it is in this league. You know, when you're not in a league like the ACC, when you're playing like a Duke or Carolina, you get your... In this league, it's not like that, because every time you step on the floor in this league, you're already playing someone so good, so you get used to it in a sense. And it's not such an eye-opening or a shocking situation. You just get used to it, and you get comfortable with it. Now, what you recognize for us to build and get to where we want to get to, we have to get old and stay old. It's what Virginia's done. It's what, like, Notre Dame has done in the past. You've got to get old and stay old. We're not getting the one-and-done instant stud who's just going to come in and can carry us right to the promised land. We have to build through getting old and staying old. And that's why in this building process, it's going to be a 5 to possibly 6 years so we can get into the habit of just really getting old. It's the best way for us to have success in this league, because the league is so deep. 15 teams.
Now, I've heard you talk about that before, mentioning Notre Dame and Virginia by name. Is that what you mean? You want to build a program that's similar to theirs?
Correct.
In that sense, that you can get old? Is that what you mean? And do the people who employ you understand that, and will they have the same patience?
And our athletic director, well, Mike Babinski hired me, and I'm so thankful and grateful. And Todd Stansbury has come in, and he's been so good to me, and he gets it. He's all about culture, and he calls it the secret sauce. And what he says on the secret sauce is about culture. And at Georgia Tech, that's what it's about. We know what type of young man we can get, and you're going to have to build and develop, and then you've got to get to your juniors and seniors and continue that way. It's the best way for success, because this league has 15 teams. I want to be able to get the one and done, but I recognize right now we're not beating Duke or Carolina on the recruiting trail right now for that kid. I get it. So we've got to be perfect in our evaluation, Jim, and we have to be perfect in our development. And then when our guys are juniors and they're 21 years old, we've got to be able to beat that 18, 19-year-old freshman at Carolina or Duke.
Can you see in the not-too-distant future, Josh, going into a living room where you know Duke has already been, North Carolina has already been, but you're going to be the guy to pull that kid out of that living room?
Well, in time, I mean, and that's what we have to get built to, and that's why, like, having the kid Josh Okogie go pro, even though it's great for Georgia Tech, it's great for Josh Okogie, it sucks for Georgia Tech this season.
Right.
We lose 20 points. You know, when you're trying to build, that's hard to sustain, to lose that. But what we can now go into a living room and say, hey, look, here we are. We've done this. Here's our platform. Here's a kid who wasn't a top 10 kid in the state, wasn't a top 100 player, didn't start in his AAU team. But through development, he's now in 2 years, he's a 20th pick, and he starts for the Timberwolves. So we here's a platform. Here's what we can do. If you give us a chance to even get your son, who's even a higher-rated kid, coming on, we can now even build that into more. So that's what our part of ourselves.
Josh Pastner joining me for a few more moments. We're on Radio Row in Atlanta. Now, your story of your coaching journey really is amazing. You and I go way back. We've talked for a number of years. You were coaching AAU as a teenager.
Yep.
How much have the players changed during that time? Or maybe have they not changed that much at all?
I don't think they've changed. And you know what? Some of my great experiences was coaching, you know, those guys. And let me tell you why. Because I was around those guys who are high-level players. I understand it. I get players. When I was at the University of Arizona, when I was at Memphis, here at Georgia Tech, in AAU ball, I get it. I understand on players. And so, yeah, things have changed here and there. Of course they have. But in the end, you know, players want to be pushed. They want to be coached. Sometimes people resist discipline and structure, but deep down inside, they really want it. And on the other hand, I'll tell you what else. When you have some guys who can score, because I've always said this, you can't – culture, you can all be about defense and toughness and all, but offensively, you've got to have that ability, that innate ability to put the ball in the basket. And when you can get that guy that can do it, you've got to give him some freedom to be able to make some plays, because you can't box him in. It's like being a painter or an artist. You got to give him some freedom. And that's what basketball is, guys who can score the ball. And that's what I've said to our staff at Georgia Tech. We've got to keep finding that next guy who can just have innate ability to put the ball in the basket and can get you a bucket when you're struggling.
Some things you can't teach, right?
You just can't teach.
Some things you cannot teach.
When you can score the ball, it's hard. It's just like James Harden. His ability to score.
What do you think when you watch him?
It's amazing. You see what and the moves that he's making. But he
Jesse, I got to ask you, though. I'm sorry to interrupt, but so many people can't stand what they see from James Harden. Now, I don't get this at all, but this whole notion that, man, he cheats. He's always on the line. He's boring. This is tired. This is not good for the league. You've heard these things, right, about him? What's your reaction to it?
You know what? And people, and he doesn't get a lot of assists. Like, a lot of his made field goals are so low.
But he does, though. He's averaging, like, 8 a game.
No, and no, but people giving him the ball, it's not a high. He's a dribble. But his scoring, and you know what? You know he wants to go left hand. You can't stop him.
You know it's coming.
But listen, it's not all. As much as he's probably worked his tail off in his whole life, he has been some God-given ability to be able to score that ball and that innate ability. What he's doing is historic. And any of those guys at that level, when you can score. And that's why I said, like R.J. Barrett versus Duke, he just has some things that either you have or you don't. He can score. Zion has that quickness off of his athleticism. You can sit in the weight room all your life. You and I could do the same workouts for the rest of our life.
We'll never be that guy.
No, he just has something gifted in him that he can do it. And that's why you got to appreciate some of those offensive skill guys that can score the ball like that.
Josh Pastner joining us live on Radio Row. It is so good to get caught up and talk some college basketball. I know you got a big one tomorrow night, so I really appreciate you and making some time. Josh, it is great to see you.
Are you coming to the game? I'll talk to you after this.
You haven't closed me yet, Coach.
Okay.
I'm looking at a few other opportunities.
It's Carolina, Georgia Tech. You're right up the road, Jim. You're a basketball guy. We got to get you back. It's football right now, but we got to get you back in March Madness here soon.
You're right. I don't see a better offer coming yet. Yeah. I don't see yet. All right, I'll give you a verbal commitment. I just haven't signed the letter of intent.
Fair enough.
All right, great to see you, Josh Pastner, joining us. That was so much fun. All right, when we come back, a lot more from the ATL. We are live on Radio Row. You never see that kind of energy on a Monday, the week of the Row. So we're off to a great start. Hour number two coming up when we return.